A Desperate Fortune, written by Susanna Kearsley and read by Catherine Kellgren.
For my son, with love and thanks for all his help. Whoever joins with thee or stands up for thee, by doing so forfeits all he hath. What is it to us that thou callest thy name Stuart, a name that will gain thee no man that was not bewitched to thee before by desperate superstition or desperate ambition or a desperate fortune? Number 22. The Quaker's advice to the young pretender in The Independent Whig, being a collection of papers all written, some of them published, during the late rebellion, Volume 4, by Thomas Gordon, London, J. Peel, 1747.
Chapter 1. My cousin didn't try to catch the bride's bouquet. She knew me well enough to know I wouldn't try to catch it either. "Come keep me company," she said, and drew me firmly to one side of all the colourful commotion. "I need to sit." My father's wild Aunt Lucy, nearly lost in layered flounces of bronze taffeta, tried once to herd us back as we went past. "Oh, girls, you mustn't run away. Go on, get in there, have a go." Smiling at my cousin, she said, "Third time lucky, Jacqueline, so they say. And Sarah, dear," she added in a cheering tone to me, "there's always hope." I might have pointed out there wasn't really. Catching things had never been my strong suit, and it always seemed ridiculous to go through all that effort just to field a bunch of flowers that, while pretty, only showed which of the women at the wedding was the most determined to be married next, not which one would be. Jackie didn't give me time to point out anything. She simply answered, "Yes, Aunt Lucy, thanks for that, but Sarah isn't feeling well." And then she steered me off again. I looked at her. "I'm feeling fine."
I had to give her some excuse, or she'd have never let us be. You know the way she is, and I could hardly say I wasn't feeling well. She'd only think that I was pregnant.
I had to admit that was true. Jackie's love life, including her two short-lived marriages, one to a singer flamboyant enough to ensure their divorce had been given a place in the tabloids, was frequently a source of gossip at these family gatherings. She fueled that gossip on her own sometimes when she got bored and had been known to start a rumour in one corner of the room to see how long it took to travel to another, but this evening she did not seem bored. I asked, because I couldn't see the man she'd come with, "Where did you leave Humphrey?"
"Over there. He found the punch bowl, I'm afraid, before I had a chance to warn him. Drank 3 glasses of it."
Uncle Gordon spiked the punch at every family wedding. No one knew with what, but even those of us who'd only ever heard about the hangovers knew better than to drink the stuff. "Poor Humphrey." Jackie sighed.
"Poor me, more like. I doubt he'll make it into work on Monday, and we've got a sales meeting." "That's what I get," she said, "for bringing my assistant to a Thomas family wedding."
I agreed she should have known better. I hadn't brought a date myself, but then I didn't have a Humphrey, clever and good-looking, sitting handily outside my office door, and no one here expected me to bring somebody anyway.
"Let's find a table," Jackie said.
We found one tucked quietly off in a corner, half hidden by one of the faux marble columns that held up the wedding hall's high ceiling, painted ethereal blue with winged cherubs. The whole setting was a bit over the top, but it suited our young cousin Daphne, whose wedding it was. Daphne lived and breathed drama, which made her quite fun in small doses, but very exhausting in larger ones.
"All a bit much?" Jackie asked me.
At first I assumed she was thinking, as I was, about the wedding, but then she asked,
"How are you coping?"
And I understood.